Welcome to the OrthoClips podcast series, where we're going to discuss the latest hot topics and high-impact papers in orthopedic surgery. I'm your host, Saqib Rahman. Let's get this episode started. Hi, and welcome. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about navigating modern surgical education. And today, my guest is Dr. Alexander Neuwirth. He's the Associate Program Director for the Orthopedic Surgery Residency and also the APD for the Stinchfield Adult Recon Fellowship, Assistant Professor of Orthopedic Surgery in the Division of Adult Hip and Knee Reconstruction at Columbia University Medical Center and the New York Presbyterian Hospital. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. This is going to be a good topic.
Thank you so much for having me.
Perfect. So how did you get interested and involved in this topic on modern surgical education? Can you maybe tell a story or experience to open things up?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. So, you know, I like to say that this happened at birth. My father served as a chairman of OBGYN and was very, very heavily involved in resident and fellow education. And so I think when the residents had the honor and privilege and stress, I imagine, of delivering me while he was watching over their shoulders, I think I realized as I came out that that was something I was interested in, surgical education, medical education. So it goes all the way back. But more seriously, there were several mentors, right? This goes through your education. I went to medical school being interested in orthopedic surgery right from the get-go. But I remember a mentor, Dr. Tobia at Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical School, who was a psychiatrist who ran the psychiatry clerkship. And his enthusiasm for education, the way that he taught, the way that he engaged patients and learners the same way, the engagement really had me consider going into psychiatry just from his incredible mentorship. That only simple fact of this mentorship really had me interested in the field. And then, of course, as I pursued orthopedic surgery, I did the rotation at Columbia, and Dr. Bill Levine at the time was program director. And similarly, his engagement, his mentorship in a time where there was not social media like there is now, right? You had these sort of online forums for medical students that he helped moderate to provide mentorship. But his engagement, when it was much harder to do so, to mentor people across the country, really got me excited about this world of education. At the end of my rotation, my clerkship, he asked me, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said something along the lines of, or to the effect of, you know, I want to take your job. I want to be a program director someday. And he remembered and sort of was making the dream happen. So I've had a path towards this. I have a real passion for it. I think it's one of the most impactful things that we can do as surgeons, right? There's obviously research, which can impact thousands, millions of people, of course. But surgical education is up there as well. And is a really important arm of what we do.
Well, it's a big topic. With the episode length, I don't want to try to cover everything. So let's focus maybe on a couple of things. I was thinking didactic residency curriculum and how to teach millennials in 2024. So I'll ask, you know, how do millennials learn best? How is this different or similar to learning by members of other generations? And so I get asked a lot of times or told a lot, you know, I learn better by doing. And I think that's true. I think that's kind of universal. People will point that out and I'll say, like, I think, yes, that's something that actually may not be particular to, you know, you. And if I'm talking to a millennial, I would say that that's fairly universal. I think very few people have incredible photographic memories. And most people need a lot of reps to get proficient. So I think those are some universal things. And, you know, active learning probably works better than passive learning, probably. But let's focus on millennials and how do they differ in terms of how they learn? And for us educators, what do we need, in surgery, what do we need to take into account and think about differently?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge topic and a really important one. I think, you know, for your audience, I think, you know, the millennial generation, to remind everyone, is roughly 1981 to 1995 or 1996 birth. And so I'm an early millennial myself. And so I think this is a really important transition point. And this happens every, you know, every couple of decades, there's a transition where you have the educators are that sort of starting to be that new generation, but most of the learners are a separate generation from the educators. And this is a bigger one probably than ones in the past, mainly because of the advent of mobile technology, obviously, right? So the millennials, what really separates them from the prior generation is that they grew up and they formed their neural connections at a time when at first technology was not as readily available, but then became available in their formative years, right? So it's the generation that remembers a pre-cell phone world, but that still had their synapses wired by the current technology. And so they're that transition point. And unfortunately, that's a big jump. It's a big generational gap, a big generational jump for educators to understand how their millennial learnees' brains are wired, really. So how do millennials learn best? I mean, you have to understand first and foremost that millennials' brains are wired for short form content in many ways. That's what social media is. It's a generation that is generally impatient. It's a generation that has access to information in a way that no prior generation in the history of the world ever had. You know, having your cell phone in your pocket, it's a cheat code. In other words, you now have access to all of the world's information at your fingertips, something that was not available before. So prior generations had to memorize this information, had to learn it. You had to learn everything and know everything. And the millennials in many ways and the future generations won't need to do that. They need to know the basics of obviously the basic science and the foundational science of what they do. But more importantly, they're wired to ask the question, why? They're wired to try to understand, you know, why the hierarchy? Why are we doing the things that we do? Why are we educating the way that we are? And so to the older generation, that can seem in some ways at times, I suppose, sort of confrontational or belligerent, but it's not at all. It's just the way that the millennial brain is wired. There are many tools that have been defined as, you know, to try to help educators learn how to educate millennials. I find these tools, you know, things like, for example, Bogard, where this is not for millennials, but in general, they're great frameworks, but you can't be married to them. For millennials, the five R's have been sort of postulated to be a good framework to teach the millennials. And the five R's basically focus on a few different things. Number one, being research-based. Meaning that you need to have done your homework prior to teaching them because they'll have access to all of the information already. Being relevant, and that really to me implies the use of appropriate technology. Rationale, meaning that you need to explain the why, like I was just saying. Relaxed, and that really has to do with sort of the content or the format of lectures, more so small group based rather than large lecture formats. And then report. Millennials really are generally thought to be closer to their families than prior generations. And that translates into the workplace and the educational environment, and that they look for mentorship, probably more so than prior generation. They look for bonding with their mentors. They look to understand their mentors both at work as well as their work-life integration, work-life balance. And so it's important to understand that framework for how to teach millennials.
So before we get too much into curriculum, maybe then I'll follow up on, you know, you said a couple of things. They really want to know why. They also are looking at shorter form content consumption and the in-person experience to be a little bit less lecture-based, I guess. That being said, the content of information they need to know is probably even more than it was a decade ago. So if you're using short form delivery and in person, you're not spending time with the lectures, then, you know, this stuff need to move online. And somewhere does this long form material have to reside? How do you still get the same amount of information if you're like spending less time doing it? And we can get into a little bit more, maybe we can talk a little bit more about curriculum, but just, you know, maybe specific for the millennial, how do you address, seems like a dilemma to me. More information, but they want to spend less time trying to learn it.
They want to spend less time in a classroom format. I think they're still willing to spend all the time to learn it. It's not that they want to spend less time. It's just the way that they want to do so. And there are many strategies to approach this. I mean, the classic one is the flipped classroom, which is a really wonderful way to do this. And what that means is fundamentally, and there are many ways to do this, but it's to have the learners learn the content prior to coming to the classroom. The classroom is not to learn the content. It's not to regurgitate something that is readily accessible and frankly can be learned in a more efficient manner outside of the classroom, but rather to use a classroom to apply that learning and to question the why and the how. And frankly, surgical specialties are a perfect, you know, way and vector for that. You know, it's not to say that you can't teach anatomy in the classroom, but, you know, you have to use cadavers. And frankly, it's much better to learn anatomy on three-dimensional models or in the cadaver lab than an educator sitting there and drawing out the brachial plexus, right? That puts everybody to sleep in 4 seconds. It's more about how to apply that. And so the flipped classroom content or format is great. I will tell you there are many, many ways to use the curriculum. I'm not going to, you know, support one versus the other, but there are many tools online. You know, with the plug, we use the ROC curriculum here at Columbia, which I think is really wonderful. And what we want is our learners to read the chapter and do the questions ahead of the core curriculum lecture. And then have the educators sort of do a flipped classroom. You know, it could be anything. It could be a whiteboard lecture. It could be a lab, whatever it is, to apply the knowledge that they've acquired ahead of time.
Okay, so yeah, I think you've brought up a couple of important points, namely how to best utilize that classroom time and the ROC curriculum you're referring to. We've started using that also. That's, for those who don't know, this is a online curriculum that the AAOS has put together for residency programs and is fairly new and is a nice one-stop shop to some extent. And I think, you know, just as an aside, one of the issues I've noted, and I don't know how you feel about this, is that although everything's in your pocket, I think that life was a little simpler when you had one really solid resource. Not to say that multiple resources is not good for certain reasons, but it does get, I could tell you that over 20 years ago, you know, when I was a resident, when you had one source and you looked at it, the same source four, five, by the sixth time, you started to remember where stuff was on the page. And that did help for recall at a time when maybe recall was more important because you didn't have everything in your pocket. But I do think that there is an information overload when every time you look up a distal radius fracture, you just pull up a different thing that comes up on your Google search. And I think curating the information and having a solid, vetted, relatively consistent resource that I think, and if you go to it again and again, that probably helps with memory retention. So I think dialing back to sort of this single source, and not to say that you should only have a single source, but I don't know, do you understand where I'm going with this? I mean, I think there is an information overload and makes it challenging when you don't curate the sources down a little bit.
I totally agree. I mean, I remember where the Krebs cycle was on my USMLE first aid, you know, thing on the page. I totally agree with you on that for sure. And it's about finding the right resource. And that's our role as, you know, program directors is to sort of look online, look at all available resources, always question the resource, and then find the one that we think is best, that uses the right amount of technology, the right amount of published research that is most engaging for our learners. And we do this on a regular basis. I mean, I'll tell you, we literally just reassessed our curriculum a couple months ago. We implemented the new format. We're very excited about it. And this is something that has to be a living and breathing beast, is this educational curriculum. It is not set in stone. Now, obviously, you don't want to overhaul it too frequently at the same time, because evidently the idea is to create this sort of five or six year, depending on the length of the residency program, to ensure that people are hitting all the right points enough times with enough repetition. So if you keep changing it over, you can sort of miss out on various things. But you certainly want to reassess, readdress, engage the learners. You know, we run polls from our residents to ask them anonymously what they think about the curriculum. Is this the best way? And you're never going to get 100% satisfaction, obviously, but you want to make sure that the vast majority are satisfied with the way they're learning.
Yeah, and the approach that you're describing is something similar to what we've been doing, at least on the ortho trauma service in our institution, where the lectures are actually on ortho clips, or they're housed there, but we kind of hold things together in something called Canvas, which is what our university uses as a platform to put out learning modules and things like that. So we have the, there'll be a module for the week. There'll be the lecture material, which I guess I say YouTube because that's where a lot of the stuff does end up. But you know, there's some objectives, and then there's a flipped classroom where we'll usually go through cases, but also try to do some whiteboard stuff and make sure that the objectives were covered. It is very challenging for the instructors. It's not what you're used to doing. Lecture-based instruction is very ingrained in all of us. It is a lot of onus on the teacher to sort of hit all the different learner levels that are in your group and to engage everybody. And it puts a lot of onus on the student as well, because there's a lot of preparation, like you said. But then if they really want to know the why, and they really are interested in the deep learning, then you can achieve that when things go really well, I think, in that scenario. One of the other questions I wanted to ask before we wrap up was about the curriculum. We're kind of already talking about it. And you guys said you recently revised yours, and it seems like you're using a lot of these principles. How do you balance like blocks of material with this concept of interleaving that I know a lot of people feel strongly about, which is that, so let's say you just spend 1 month all on one topic. And to some extent, there's some logic behind that. You can build off of the previous day. You kind of, maybe you're having some labs that are integrated with the topic. Maybe there's multiple, you know, discussion boards or whatever it may be. You're hitting this topic from different angles. You're doing questions and you build upon it. And then you moved on to peds, and then you move on to hand. And then by the end of the year, you've covered everything, but you haven't done hand now for like 8 months in that conference setting. Now, again, people are on hand rotations, they're taking calls, so it's not like you never see it. Versus not grouping things and sort of breaking things up a lot more so that you keep coming back to the same topic, which supposedly helps with retention. But sometimes I think the learners feel like they're jumping all over the place. How do you reconcile that in your curriculum?
That's a great question. I think interleaving is really a good way to learn, for sure. I think that it's all about the pace of interleaving. I think that fundamentally residency incorporates interleaving by nature, right? Through rotation. But you're right, it's at a slower pace, 6, 8, 12 week blocks, depending on the residency program. So that's a very, very slow pace, surely. But it's also incorporated with, as you've alluded to, call, core curricula, where all the residents have to be, and similarly the labs and intern skills and so forth. Now, having said that, I think it's hard to really create a sort of high frequency interleaving model, because you do have to repeat these skills. This is not just purely intellectual. A lot of this is really physical skills. What we do is physical labor. And you have to kind of repeat the same skills over and over and over to get comfortable with them. For example, I mean, I'm a joint replacement surgeon, right? And yeah, you just have to get comfortable, you know, using a saw and understanding, you know, the fluoroscopy and the x-ray and so forth. And that just takes doing it over and over and over again. And then the interleaving concept comes in, like we said, with call. There's cross coverage, certainly residents are on vacation or, you know, what have you. So I think it does happen throughout residency organically to some degree. But I don't think that a true high frequency interleaving model really could work for a variety of reasons, you know, patient care continuity, feedback. It's really difficult with what we do. So you have to incorporate in a way that is at an appropriate frequency, which I think, you know, a 4 to 6 week frequency is appropriate, ensuring that your rotations are repeated throughout the residency, and also ensuring that the rotations are carefully thought out throughout residency to ensure that all of the key topics, all of the key subspecialties are addressed before fellowship applications in the junior years, and then again in the senior years.
Yeah, one of the things, you know, and at least in our program, and I imagine some programs have them, we have our kind of rotation-based curriculum. So when you're on rotation, you're focused, oh, with me, they're on trauma and they're focused on that. But then they do have their residency curriculum that is kind of where everybody meets. And that's, everybody's on different rotations. And that's where they're, we're trying to decide, like, how much do we group things together versus, you know, maybe break things up a little bit. And I don't know, we're thinking of moving a little bit to more grouping things together, because I think things were perhaps a little bit too chopped up. So we'll see.
Yeah, and it's true. I mean, the point is, you know, the goal of residency is to have the trainees create a toolbox where they grab a tool out of every rotation and put it all together by the end and become one whole surgeon, right? Who can take a trauma call, who can, even if they're not a hand surgeon, if they're going to the community, can take hand call, you know, whatever it is that they need to do. And you're right that trying to group things together is probably the best way to create this quote unquote complete surgeon. It's just a tough thing to do. And I think this is where it's important to have educators collaborate closely to talk about what they're doing. You know, I think that the problem with what we do is that research is never really going to give a clear answer as to how to educate. This is something that we just have to talk about with educators and learners, because data is going to lag. It's just always going to lag. And and it's also hard to gather, and there's not enough data. So while I'm big on research on education, I think it's really wonderful, and I like to do it as well. And I look at surveys of residents, various things that we do. I do think that fundamentally, a lot of this will come from just close collaboration between programs, between program directors, trainees, leadership, to in many ways try to standardize as much of what we do as possible. You know, I think one of the strengths of the American educational system is actually very standardized. The surgical training here is much more standardized than most of the rest of the world, where you sort of do this sort of indefinite fellowship until you're told that you're ready. Here, it's much more standardized, thankfully, thanks to sort of the time-based model and the competency-based model that we have. So we have to embrace that. And the way you embrace it is through close collaboration to ensure that we try to standardize it even further.
So I think to learn better, it would be great to have better research on which methods work best. But to be realistic, we're probably not going to get that anytime soon. So we should probably share our experiences. And I would say potentially across specialties too. I mean, this is the kind of thing that others, you know, meaning other surgical specialties, even other specialties outside of surgical specialties, how are their training module? And we've thought about this at our own institution that, you know, different residencies are doing some pretty interesting things and shifting their teaching models that we could probably learn from each other. So I think that's probably a great way to end the conversation. Definitely some future directions, I think, that could help us all learn from each other a little bit better. And I think there's also a lot more topics potentially we could talk about in the future on another episode. But again, I've been chatting with Dr. Alexander Neuwirth from Columbia Presbyterian. We've been talking about navigating modern surgical education. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really wonderful. Great discussion.